Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, welcome back to Dark Place Dreamers Season 2. It's myself, and well, now you have not escaped the name, Dark Place Robert. If we'd called it something else, you could have escaped the name, but it's myself and Robert.
Do you know something? I just gotta roll with it at this point. I'm just Dark Place Robert. Grand. I think I'll just leave everybody worrying about me.
Well, you know, after getting Alex to call into Books Boys to talk about 1984, I almost renamed him Dystopian Alex. But then I think that's worse.
Yeah, you're not, you know, these are some strange nicknames you're throwing about the place.
I'm not going to ask what nicknames people have for me because they will hurt my feelings. Robert,
they're
what are we doing
today? And charming. So I finally managed to twist your arm into doing an actual review on a comic book, and
we did a superheroes.
It's not a superheroes. This is a comic book. Sorry. So this is a series on Netflix that's based off a comic book series written by Neil Gaiman. It's a comic book series. It's very close to my heart. I read it when I was a teenager. I was absolutely obsessed with this. It's an interesting one because it takes place in DC, the DC universe. Mm-hmm. So Superman and Batman do actually feature in the comic books, but they're kind of background characters. So while all of that is taking place, this story actually follows this character, the Dream.
Do they appear in the series?
They don't actually. In the rest of the series, yeah. So you've managed to avoid that. There's one superhero, I guess. I wouldn't consider them a superhero, but it's comes later on, and we'll talk about that.
They're going to shoehorn it in. This happened before. They got me hooked on season one of Game of Thrones, and then they introduced dragons. And dragons are one of my no-goes.
There's a dragon in the next episode. Are you
okay?
Oh,
no! You've done it! When they make me like things, and then they bring in...
The series is called The Sandman. It's all about dreams. How were you not expecting somebody to dream up a dragon?
I don't dream about dragons. Do you know what I dream about? I dream that there's massive pieces of fruit, like oranges and bananas, floating in the sky like clouds, and I'm hopping around on them.
I'm sure a psychoanalysis.
So that's been a recurring dream since my childhood.
Okay. Well, maybe we get to the end of the series and we'll actually be able to interpret those dreams. And
there's going to be that episode at the end where they say, "No, if you dream about giant fruit in the sky, you are crazy. Get out of the house. Run away from him."
He's going to take out your insides and replace it with stuffing. it's grand. Anyway, so the series is called Sandman. It's based on this endless character called the Dream. There are seven endless in total. I can't remember all of their names, but... Death is another one of the endless. So just this fundamental characteristic of the universe that is, I always mispronounce this word, anthropomorphized into a person. The opening sequence of this episode that we just watched is the Magnus trying to capture Death, that they can essentially blackmail Death into resurrecting Magnus's son and somebody else's son. I can't remember that character either.
No, that sounds in line with what I watched. So before we go into like what happened, so you read these comics when you were younger. So this is a new series, but it's old comics, right?
Yes.
Okay. So they just pulled from the vault of like, oh, what are we going to do next? What about that one that was floating about?
I suppose yes. It's a story that's written in one medium. Every story has been told in the history of humanity at this point. You know, once you've read the dictionary, every other book is just a rehash. So this is just taking one medium, comic books, and transferring it over to another medium, a television series or a Netflix series. It's actually been done very, very well. It's very close to the comic books, and even a lot of the imagery is very, very close and is just generally done really, really well. There are some comic book adaptations that are just awful and deviate really? Too far away from... Yeah, funnily wow. enough.
I would never have believed that.
I'm not even thinking of the MCU. And you probably don't even... You've probably rejected those three letters out of your understanding on yeah. principle. So that's all the Marvel Iron Man stuff.
Yeah, I know.
I was actually thinking...
And we watch Batman and Superman play chess in Batman versus Superman and all the rest of it, you know. So that's an old joke PJ and I have. We made the joke up way before they even released the film. It was Batman versus Superman. And we said, well, versus in what sense? And we said, neither of us saw the film, by the way. But we said, I'm sure they don't verse each other. I'm sure they're teaming up. What are they going to do? Versus each other in a game of flipping chess? And that was, and I've sticking to that, even though that was like 10 years ago when the film is now out and long forgotten about. And I don't know if they're a team or enemies in the film. So
I genuinely thought that's you were making reference to an Injustice comic series, which was Superman versus the Flash in a game of chess, and they're moving all of the pieces.
Did it already?
They already did it, and they actually had a lovely conversation about the role of superheroes and should Superman be, you know, flying around the place and getting involved in the Middle East?
No, he shouldn't.
Well, he should be. You can't tell Superman what to. You can't tell another human being what they can and can't physically do.
Attention, this is a public service announcement. Superman, stop it. So, okay. Look, let's give the 10-second recap here. You made me watch something made by one of the comic book companies, and I was very, very like, I don't know about this. We watched the first episode just half an hour ago there, and I really liked it. So.
Yeah, I don't think I properly sold it to you. I didn't mention that all of it takes place in England. It's very British.
No! So you gave me all these little details about like the end of time and sand and the things and the dreams. And I was like, yeah, I'm hearing stuff and things and stuff. And then you watch it and I'm like, hold on. There's a little posh English boy in a mansion? Why didn't you just tell me that?
I feel like this was made for you. But also, you know, I do want to get your take on a lot of the more bizarre things that the dream does do.
Okay.
So are we all right to start walking through the episode? Or?
Let's go.
All right, just like a dream. So, yes, so they're trying to capture Death. They accidentally capture the Sandman instead of the dream.
So let's just talk about that real quick, because they capture Death. It's an interesting... Well, they captured, the Sandman. He himself is trying to capture or stop someone else in that moment, right? Who's like a nightmare that he's created, who will come back at the end of the episode. The most important thing here is he's got very funky octagonal sunglasses. And he looks like a very cool, you know, 80s chap. So that's vital.
He is a hideous creation. And I don't like anything about him.
Oh, no. You know more about him than I do.
This is the Corinthian. Oh, yeah, you're going to love him. Like, sorry.
I don't know. If that's a good thing, you just told me he was terrible.
Oh, yeah, no, he's terrible, but so are you. In the most loving way. In the most loving way. So, yes, the Sandman is trying to capture the Corinthian, a nightmare that has escaped the dream and has gone into reality and is just murdering people. So whenever the dream is captured by the Magnus, and also, by the way, the dream, Morpheus, the Endless... he has many titles and nobody really agrees on any particular title, so
but it's handy because we can still call the show Dark Place Dreamers because one of his names is the Dream and we didn't have to come up with a new title. So that was very handy.
Oh yeah, no, it is. I've got a running theme now, apparently.
It was almost Sandman Survivors until I realized that A, that was a terrible name, and B, we could call it the same thing that we called it before.
It's, you know, I feel like it was, you know, it was just destiny, which is another one of the Endless, actually. He doesn't feature in the series. So where were we?
He captures, we were at the beginning, really. He captured, we got cool octagon glasses, and then the Magus captures the dreamy man.
Yeah, this is quite interesting because the Corinthian isn't actually a big bad. In the comic books, he's just a character that features much later on. Here, he's depicted coming to the house where the dream has been captured in and giving a lot of information to the Magus about how to keep the dream and how to do all of this. All of that in the comic books, the Magus had to work out by himself.
So right.
He doesn't know who he's captured, and he actually has to derive.
I feel like that was just how do we move this plot along quicker in the TV show, you know?
It was, because we have no idea how the Corinthian got to the house so quickly.
Yeah, he disappears, like, oh, he's all-knowing, you know? I don't know.
Even if it was kind of like, I can sense where the dream is, he still has to get there, and that's going to be... but then again, there's a lot of time jumping around the place that could be more suggestive.
Even on a first watch, I just kind of thought, oh, this is just like an easy way to get some exposition in, you know, where he arrives and he's like, here's some facts that you need to know about the thing you just did. Bye-bye.
So he gives very detailed instructions on how to keep the dream and why he'd want to keep the dream. So, grants him eternal life. He tells him that if he gets out, he's going to murder you.
Brings a purpose to the episode we're watching.
That kind of stuff.
Look, if you let him go, there's no show. So keep him for a while.
Oh, there's a show. There's lots of shows. There's lots of stories to go on. But yes, so they eventually construct a nice prison for the dream. And this has
So initially they have him in a circle in the ground, which is kind of holding him in like a circle of salt. Wards off Dracula kind of way, in like he can't step out of the realm of the circle, and then he's like, yeah, that's not really gonna work though, so by the time he wakes up, maybe have like a cool glass sphere thing that he literally can't get out of. It's like, okay, yeah, let's try that.
Yeah, so that does make a lot of sense. It's gonna stop him from just walking out of the little circle, I guess.
Yeah. But what do we think? So a little bit of setting here, they're in this fancy big mansion, and there's like an old Magus guy who is Tywin Lannister. And there's some servants and things, and he has a dead son that he really loved and a living son that he's uninterested in. And then he says things like, you know, I really miss that one good son I had. And this poor little posh English boy is kind of like, oh, papa. No, not quite like that, but it's sad. But he just lets the son see all these things. He's got like weird cult people in his house chanting like, fear the darkness. And then it didn't build into the Iron Maiden song. But they're all with their hoods and doing weird rituals. And it's like, oh, you didn't even send the boy to bed. It's just like, yeah, you can just watch this weird thing where we like summon a demon.
I mean, in some ways, that could be a form of, we've seen him that he can be quite abusive to the son. That could just be another form of abuse. It's like, here, boy, watch how weird I am, you little kid.
Yeah, I mean, these were my initial thoughts. But then, yeah, as we get on, we realize that, no, he's actually just abusive. So that's you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that they get a close-up of the boy looking sad whenever he says, ah, my loving son, he was the joy of my life. And just the child.
Yeah. If only I had a son I could love. But the other guy's like, oh, no.
But, yeah, so that's very close to the comic books as well. So moving forward, well, what sequence happened next? Do you remember? What would be the most noteworthy thing that happens next? They grow up.
So yes, so sometimes there's some time jumps. They do grow up a bit. Some time passes. We realize that he's had the guy captured for 10 years. The guy, though, is very sexy. Very sexy guy.
This is another reason why I thought you'd enjoy the show.
Well, you looked him up and you said outside of the show, he's not so sexy, but at least in the show, he's depicted in a very sexy way. He's in this glass sphere and he's naked the entire episode. Now, this is the acting role that I want. It's like, you'll not really say any, he speaks a little bit at the end. It's like for 3/4 of the episode, you don't have to learn any lines and you lie down naked and that's really all you do. It's like, okay, I get into that.
Yep. I mean, it's a very easy role, and he just has to look smouldering all of the time.
Mm. And they won't let him out, and he won't speak. He doesn't speak at all to them. And the dad, the Magus, kind of keeps saying, bring back my son and also make me, like, immortal and some other selfish, egomaniacal things for me, and we let you go. And then the little boy wants to let him go. And then he summons a raven, and the dad makes the little boy shoot the raven, and then tells the little boy that he's stupid anyway, even though he did the thing he was meant to do.
Now, even though you're calling him a little boy, this has been a time jump, so he must be 17 or some such.
He's a teen at this point.
He's a little bit older, yeah.
It's sad.
It's a very poignant moment as well. You see that the Sandman has tears in his eyes as he sees his pet raven dead on the floor.
And the boy looks to him and he stands up in my favorite moment of the whole show, because he's sitting down completely naked, all kind of arms wrapped around himself. And he stands up, opens his arms, is kind of like, behold my naked body. Here is my genitalia. I wonder how many takes they had to do for the other actor not to like give that curious glance down, because he just maintains eye contact the whole time.
Just a quick comparison. We're all guilty of it. That scene actually happens much later on at another death outside the glass dome that they've trapped the Sandman in. That scene actually takes place after the death of the father. That's later on in the episode.
Something we forgot
to mention is that the Sandman had all of his tools robbed from him. So whenever he was summoned, he was wearing a helmet, he had a ruby, and he also had a bag of sand.
Bag of sand, a ruby amulet type thing that he wore on his neck, and a helmet, which is like a gas mask with an elephant trunk, basically.
Well, it's a spine that's coming out of it.
It's a spine, right. So
it's very similar to a plague doctor's mask.
Yeah, it gave me those vibes. But once he takes off that horrible stuff, he's a sexy guy, and behold, and all the rest of it. So, I suppose the only other notable thing I can think of is a nice blonde lady arrives to the house. So basically, there's these crowds outside the house all the time, trying to get in to like get the magus to do some magic, I guess. And they have like some debaucherous parties and things, and some of them get turned away if they're already too full or he wants to go to bed or whatever. They don't go into the reasons, but the kid comes out to turn a big crowd away, and this blonde girl arrives and helps him to convince the others to leave. And then she's like, so since I helped you, can I come in? And then she moves in and gets pregnant by the magus.
Yeah, she just kind of hangs about for ages and ages and ages. It's never quite explained. Her role is never really made clear at all.
No.
She just shows up. Now, she's an incredibly important character. She features in later episodes.
Does she? Right. What she basically does in this episode is not very much till she gets pregnant, and then she takes all the mask and the ruby and things, and a lot of money, like they say, like 200K or like a lot of money. And then
that was back in the day as well.
Yeah. And runs off with all of that stuff. And we see that her baby's born healthily later, and that's it really. She comes and then she eventually leaves, but he's kind of like, I'll bring her back here because apparently I can just make people come back because I own them, that whole vibe.
But he is the father, he does have certain rights, but also he was just an arrogant monster.
He was a terrible person.
At that point he does go to her, try and negotiate with the dream, that he's willing to release the dream if he goes out, captures your wand, and also maybe, just a wee touch of immortality and grand wealth.
Yeah, so he says, he comes into this guy that he's held captive for 10 years. It's like, oh no, this woman that I was really treating quite poorly has left and taken some things with her. Like the utter shock that someone that I treated poorly would then turn the tables and treat me poorly in return. I can't believe it. And now you, who I've treated very, very poorly indeed, how about you help me? But in doing so, I want you to get that woman back. But also the things that I've been asking you to do for 10 years that you've said no to, I do still need you to do those as well as another prerequisite.
And like, also, I love how he also says that she robbed you.
Yeah, she stole your things that I first stole, and now like I need you to get her back.
To you, you know,
but still gave me the immortality and bring back my son and all the other things. I still need those as well.
Come on, chop chop!
And then he hits his son with a stick.
Oh yes, and then eventually, there's a fight between the father and the son. The father hits the back of his head off the dome that's keeping the dream contained and all of that. It's not exactly the most dramatic death.
The death was very weak. The son pushes him, he taps his head, there's a little trickle of blood, And I was like, okay, he's going to not like that. And then all of a sudden he's on the floor with millions of blood and he's dead. And I was like, what? That didn't seem like, I didn't expect that. I thought there was going to be more, you know, I thought he was going to try to hit the stick again. The sun was going to fight back a bit more. He's just like, no, he's dead. And his dying spiteful words are, you're never getting out of that glass cage.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I appreciate that it's a more realistic death. Death is generally not dramatic, I guess.
No dying words to his son.
No.
Like this is worse. Not even angry dying words. Not even you just killed me. Like, nothing. Like, I have no interesting thoughts about you in any way, positive or negative.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah, it is.
I didn't even think of that. Ow. Yes, and now the young lad is the master of the house, and he has every right to release the dream, and that's when we have the scene of the dream standing up.
This is where it is, yeah. And this is where I stop liking the dream, because I understand his stubbornness. I understand why he didn't want to give in to the guy for 10 years, whatever it was. Now the son says, look, I don't want immortality or any of that, you know, selfish stuff. Just tell me that if I let you out, you won't hurt me and you can go. And he still just refuses to say anything and sits there for like decades more. And we have a big jump with his son's now an old man in a wheelchair with his like partner. And it's at this point, it's like, why didn't you just say, yeah, I'll not hurt you. And then I might, you know, you're not imprisoning yourself at this point, you know? And even as an old man, the son says to him, like, I just wanted you gone. You wouldn't give me the assurance that you wouldn't kill me if I let you out. I don't know why you've done this.
I suppose in some ways he doesn't want to lie. And the boy did kill his raven.
Oh, but the boy was he saw that the dad was mistreating the boy and made him kill the raven.
At what point do you have to take responsibility for your own actions?
No, that boy was like in a bad situation trying to impress the father that was abusing him and called him an idiot for not shooting the bird, and then he shot the bird and then called him an idiot for shooting the bird and then hit him with a stick. So I feel bad for the boy.
Everybody has a bad backstory. If we actually look into
everybody shoots the raven and gets hit with a stick. Yeah, it's part of growing up.
It's character development. It's character building. I'm sorry. At some point, you do have to take responsibility. Sorry, I'm also a massive fanboy of the dream, so anything he does.
Oh, look, I do like him, but he lost me a little bit. Because there's also this thing where, so we should mention an important backstory. Without the dream, there's problems in the world, right? So, like, some people are in a sleep they can't get out of. Some people are never able to sleep. They're just, like, wandering around begging to be able to go to sleep. And there's people in, like, kind of in-between states. So there's a bit of, a decades-long sleep crisis in the world.
About a century, yeah.
And he has no interest in fixing this. You know, he could have got let out of the cage by just saying, I won't harm you, and then gone and fixed all this stuff. And he doesn't want to do that. He's not interested. And I thought that was quite selfish.
I guess in a few ways there, he is a fundamental essence of the universe. He shouldn't have to bend his knee to humanity. And he does view humanity as a collective conglomerate.
Yes, so you said this during the episode, and I thought, that's fine if it weren't for two things. The first is that, like, it literally is his job to make the people wake up and go to sleep and have his sand. Like, that's just what he does. So he's not doing that right now, and he has the chance to go back and continue doing that. So it's like, oh, you're a force of nature. It's like, yeah, but you're not doing the thing that you could now just go and do. You're given your freedom if you'll take it. But also, at the end of the episode, when he gets back to his little palace and he's like, right, crunch time, these people, everything's wrong. I will not have it. I'm going to fix it. It's like, well, hold on. You had the chance to fix it there about 50 years ago. Don't give me all this drama now. Like,
they actually
humans, what are they doing?
They go into a little bit of detail in that in future episodes, actually. It's quite a while off. We'll talk about it when we get to it. But I suppose on another part of it, like talking about the dream sees humanity as one. So there was the Magnus who was being horrible to him, has kidnapped him, and he's, you know, depriving him of pretty much anything, even entertainment. He's just locked him in a basement. And there's also all of the guards that are coming and making sure that nothing happens to him. That's humanity, and they're all brutal, and they are all just terrible people. Like, all of the people are just terrible. That's my experience of the people I've encountered right now.
Fair. And I suppose the wrap-up here is he manages to make some kind of dream sequence happen with one of the security guards, makes him shoot him, he's in the glass cage, shoots the glass cage, escapes. So that's how he gets out, basically.
Oh, yes. No, that's a massive fundamental point, is it's while he's begging for the dream to talk to him, the old man sits in a wheelchair and the wheelchair scuffs the writing on the wall, that or writing in the floor that was keeping
he the broke the circle sealed. And now that the glass is broke, he can get out of the glass and then get out of the circle. So, yeah.
And then he confronts the son. It's actually a lot nicer in the series what he does. In the comic books, he actually forces the son to go through this nightmare sequence of forever waking up.
I think the son was better to him than the dad was. I don't know why he would punish him. What does he decide? This is a blank for me. He doesn't. Does he kill him? What does he do to him in the series?
In the series, he just says he wipes the boundaries between dreams and nightmare and blah, blah. Gives him some weird punishment. It's very glossed over. In the comic books, it's a lot worse. But he does punish the son for his behavior, but he did spend an entire lifetime essentially being a coward and not letting the dream out, even though the dream, the world was in chaos.
Well, the son must feel silly now because he didn't kill him.
Well, it's like, oh, he could have let him out
50 years ago, though.
He is asleep for the rest of his life.
Maybe if he'd let him out all those years ago, he wouldn't have done that.
He didn't say. There was nothing he could do, but either way, the son did choose to be, I don't know.
And we have four things that happen that make us want to watch the next episode, I suppose. So one is that he just escaped, right? So there's something there. The second is the baby is born to the blonde girl, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The third is we then see the cool octagonal glasses chap. And he's in a room, and we see that behind his glasses, he's got weird, bloody eye things. And he has someone in a chair that he's taken their eyes out. So there's something going on with him.
He's got mouth. He's got two mouths for eyes.
Little mouth eyes.
Little mouth eyes with teeth and everything. But he can
bite. Right, I didn't actually spot the detail. But he was bleeding from it, I think. Maybe that was, I don't know.
Oh, no, he had eaten an eyeball with his eyes.
Oh, so he was just wiping that away, right?
He was dribbling.
And the fourth thing is the dream gets back to his own realm to discover that he's been gone for a century and his palace is all in collapse and his people have all left. Either they went to find him or they thought he's not coming back. And he's like, how dare they not trust me? You've been gone for a century, mate. A century, you know. He didn't just pop to the shops, so.
What's a century to him? It must be a blink of an eye.
I mean, apparently, because he didn't seem that bothered in his cage when he never spoke. But it's only at the end of the episode where we get more dialogue from him now, and he's like saying what's happening to my, you know, realm and that kind of thing. And I just mentioned the actor thing. Oh, hold on. I got to learn all these lines. Like, what about the other bit where I was just naked in the cage?
There's something I love about the dream as well in the series that's not explained very well, is he always talks very quietly. So I don't think you ever see him shout. And I just thought that's a nice feature because he is the dream. And it's more like he doesn't want to wake people up. Mm-hmm. So he talks very softly the entire time.
Good jawline.
Very good, and nice cheekbones as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's us.
We're going to end it on that weird note.
Weirdly, we finished on not a very important point. It's like, here are some cliffhangers. And the man was pretty.
Yep.
But like, you know, I should say that I really liked it. I was very skeptical going in. It could still all go wrong, but I think it was good. And also, I think that we didn't make any notes because I wasn't sure, you know, I wanted to know, make sure I liked it before I sort of said, let's do the podcast. So this is very spontaneous tonight. And I liked it. And I said, okay, we just watched it. It's fresh. No notes. Let's go. Improv. And we did it, and we did quite well. And while you were preparing a tea before we recorded, I immediately already had a theme tune ready. And that's ridiculous, because that was very fast. And that song is Hypnopompia by Wiggly Fred and the Cabbage A-Go-Go, from, I believe, circa 1984. And I think that it's not released, and you will not maybe find it anywhere. There might be an old YouTube knocking about, I'm not sure, but thanks to Wiggly as always. He's the chap who lets us use all the theme tunes for all the podcasts, so thanks to Wiggly of Trapdoor. I think that's us. I'm going to put the first episode out on the Books Boys feed and things like that to let people see it. And then if they like it, they can come back and things, and we'll put some more on the Patreon. And there's 10 episodes on this one.
So. I'm just delighted. I feel like this is the gateway for you into all of the other comic books.
It is. Give me 2 months and I'll be like, have you seen the new Spider-Man reboot? They're rebooting it. Would you believe it? They're rebooting it. It's never been done since last year. It's the origin story of Spider-Man again. And it'll be fantastic, you know?
So. Okay, maybe not quite that far. Fine, fine.
Oh, there's. I saw some comics when I was abroad and they had like Superman, Superboy, which I'd never heard of. And G.I. Joe, and then Woody Woodpecker. And I thought that was brilliant. They just like, oh, well, we ran out of superheroes. How about Woody Woodpecker?
Well, I was like, you know, comic books aren't all just superheroes. It's just that happens to be the most popular genre that's translated into that.
For reasons unknown. Look, give me the Woody Woodpecker in the MCU. I might see that one.
What about Asterix and...
Asterix and Obelisk. Yeah, it's all right, I guess. And I'm happy with the likes of the Eritrea ones. Tintin, yeah, Tintin. But just, I don't know, just give me a Woody Woodpecker film, Marvel, if you're listening. Or they don't own the rights to that, probably. Oh. Whoever owns Woody Woodpecker, which behemoth in the media industry own the rights to Woody Woodpecker? Get that one going.
Look, we have Sandman. I'm happy with that. That's all we needed. And we have a good adaptation of it.
Okay. Well, today we have entered the Sandman. And
I haven't.
Well.
That's okay.
I don't know. It was the first episode, so it was the enter, and it was the Metallica reference. That's it. Have a sleepy day. Sleepy night.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.